Action fanatics, welcome to another edition of the Bulletproof Podcast. I'm your host, Chris the Brain, and guess who is back? It's a surprise to everyone, including myself. He's back. It's Chad Cruz, back on the Bulletproof Podcast.
Back from the dead. I cannot be killed. No matter how much you wanted me to stay away, I'm back.
Some would say you may be hard to kill off this program.
They could say that. I don't know why they would.
I know though. Exactly who would say that, and that is our third member of our broadcast here. He's back as well, the toy man, Christy Petrillo.
That's right. I'm back, but I couldn't possibly measure up to the introduction for the return of Chad Cruz. The spotlight is on him, but more importantly, the spotlight tonight is on Mr. Steven Seagal.
It is, because we are celebrating Steven Seagal's birthday, because somebody had to. And yes, we decided we would take one for the team and do so. But before we get into that, obviously, want to again welcome back Chad. I think sometime last year I said he was like our Roman Reigns, and he just shows up when he wants to. And he's abusing that more and more every time. So he's back. And of course, as this drops, it is April the 10th. It is Steven Seagal's birthday. We have survived Going Bananas Week. We have survived WrestleMania weekend, and hopefully we've all survived the eclipse. It's not some sort of alien invasion or something happens that day. This may be the final podcast if they haven't just taken down the whole infrastructure. Are you ready for a crazy day that day, Chad?
I'm kind of looking forward to it. You know, I don't really get the hype with the eclipse. It's not like a thing that I'm.
Yeah,
I'm not driving hours to go see it. I don't really care that much. But if it's some wild shit happening, I think that could be interesting. Oh,
yeah.
Right?
So we are recording this ahead of time. This could be it. Check out bulletproofaction.com. See if that's still up and running. The aliens didn't shut that down. And you know what else you should probably check out? Figures Toy Company. Chris, what is going on with your toy empire? Is this the episode where you're going to announce the Michael Dudikoff figure? Go ahead.
Unfortunately, it is not. Right now, we're pretty much still at a lull. You know, we're still coming out of Chinese New Year, but we do have a lot of new products in store. We did get in the new Evilise variant, Evilise of Lucha Underground and early AEW fame. The redheaded variant is now out. The Joe Besser Three Stooges figure is now out. So we now have a complete collection of every Stooge. Moe, Larry, Curly, Shemp, Curly Joe Derita, and Joe Besser are all in stock at figurestoycompany.com. We are the first company to have made all of the Stooges, as well as doing Lupe the Wolfman. So we've actually done a foil from one of their famous short films, Idle Rumors. But more importantly, coming up later in the spring, early summer, we will have the more updated modern articulation figures. We're going to start with those supplementary wrestling figures, the announcers, the referee, the female referee, the security guard, the MMA ref, just a whole host of things to set up your display, set up your figure photography. They will all be in stock at figurestoycompany.com. And you can check out our social media, figurestoycompany.com on Facebook and Instagram, and Figures Toy Co. on Twitter, for the updates for when they arrive.
Thank you so much. And speaking of Three Stooges, I kind of feel like we're the Three Stooges here. And
we are definitely a couple of knuckleheads.
Indeed. Let's get into it. We've kind of teased it. We've mentioned it. We're going to talk about it. It's hard to kill an early Steven Seagal movie. And Chad, I know you have the theory about the goatee. Why don't you share that with everybody?
This is a theory that I had.
Yeah, you told me once, if he's got the goatee, don't watch the movie.
Okay, that sounds like something I could come up with. Yeah, I was probably drunk when I said that, but yeah, that's a pretty damn good theory. I think that Steven Seagal, there's certainly a point in his career, and it probably isn't too much longer after this movie, maybe 5 or 6 years, that the goatee appears. The glasses appear, and the myriad of random jackets appear. You know, and as we'll see in this film, that, you know, he's clean shaved. He's got the slick ponytail. He's looking trim. He was never like the fittest guy in the world, but he's looking pretty trim. And I think he's relegated to only one leather jacket in this, which means pure revenge. So, yeah, if I had mentioned that to your brain, which I believe you, because I have a terrible memory, when the goatee appears, run away. Yeah,
goatee appears, it's hard to watch, not hard to kill.
There you go.
But I do have a rebuttal for your previous introduction a few moments ago, Brain. You said we were taking one for the team for this one. This is one of Seagal's more highly regarded
films. Right, yeah, actually.
It's certainly nothing. It's nothing like the Dollar Tree fare that both you and I have come across. You know, you can check out my review of Attrition on bulletproofaction.com for some thoughts on the latter-day Seagal films. But this is one that I think we can pretty much hold in a higher regard than what he would become infamously known
you
for.
You are correct there. If we were doing a latter stage, if we were doing a goatee one, then we definitely would be taking one for the team.
I took that more as a everyone hates Steven
Seagal. That's kind of where I was going, yeah. Because people probably don't want to celebrate Steven Seagal.
Right.
After all he's done and his picture with the carrot.
And I'd like to say this, right, Brain? People, we get angry. Social media is too easy to shit all over people, right? Metaphorically speaking.
Much like Seagal shit all over himself when he was choked out by Judo Jean LaBelle. Take
that. Yes, that is true. Spread that. That's not a rumor. That really happened. But people like to jump all over people, and sometimes it's warranted. Other times it's not. But we like to put some celebrities on a pedestal as if they're these amazing people who do no wrong. And then other ones do something, you know, that isn't great, and we hate all over them. Let me just tell you folks something. All these people are fucking assholes. None of them deserve anything that you're giving them. They all suck. Can we just enjoy their movies? Thank you.
I will argue that Michael Dudikoff does not suck.
Well,
who does not?
There's a couple out there.
All right.
I don't want to know anymore.
Exactly. That's what's best, is if you just don't know, then it's just they're whatever they're in your brain. Whatever's in your mind, whatever you remember as a youngster growing up, that's who that person is. And that's part of the problem with social media, is we get to know more than we really need to about people.
Yes.
I believe it was the late great Patrice O'Neill, a very funny comedian, who once said on the Opie and Anthony show, all social media did was made us realize that celebrities are not any better than us.
Right. Excellent point.
I would argue they're worse.
Well, there's that too. All right. Well, let's get in it. Hard to Kill, released on February 9th, 1990. The movie begins in Los Angeles in 1983. And that's where we see Mason Storm, Steven Seagal, doing some surveillance work. He's upset he's missing the Oscars. And this is the only time you'll hear Steven Seagal and the Oscars mentioned at the same time.
And now, to tie this into recent events, sadder recent events, what film actually won at the Oscars that night?
I know who. Was it An Officer and a Gentleman? It was Louis Gossett Jr.
RIP to.
He won his Oscar that night. Yep. I did notice that. I was like, isn't that interesting? Isn't that quite the coincidence that we are we'll be talking about?
I wish it was a better tie-in, but we do have to mention that, Lou Gossett Jr. sadly passed away.
We do. And we'll talk about that before the end of the show. I didn't want to bring us down too much. I mean, we're already celebrating Steven Seagal. He's doing the surveillance. There's like the classic scene where like two cars are meeting on a dock somewhere. Mm-hmm. What's going on? It's a mobster Calabrese and this mysterious man in the shadows who's basically like, I need you to kill a Senator Caldwell. And there's Storm's like, oh, who's that? Come on, who are you? Who's this man in the shadows? He must hit something, it's a noise, and the mob guys are like, what the hell was going on over there? So they go checking out. Storm's like, I gotta get the hell out of here. And that's when we see the mysterious man in the shadow step into the light, and it's Assemblyman Vernon Trent, played by the one and only William Sadler, one of the great villains of action movie history. So we see him, Chad, but
yeah,
Storm at this point did not see him.
Right. Right. Which, you know, it helps for the story, but, when I see William Sadler, I get excited. So I'm like giddy. I'm like, ooh, he's a bad guy. I can't wait.
You liked him most when you saw him in Die Hard 2, though.
Yeah, for the first time you see him in Die Hard 2 is my favorite scene of that movie.
I know it is. And you have.
Let's also not forget one of my personal favorites, Trespass.
That's a good. Oh, that one's underrated. You know,
very, very underrated.
I think the folks who talk about it with high esteem, they're like, yeah, that's a great movie, but just not enough people talk about it.
Well, I think you're setting us up for a future episode of this podcast.
Yeah, for a future podcast.
See you in six months.
And can I mention that, you know, it's 1983, folks. Yeah. So Seagal's doing surveillance and he literally has like a gigantic news camera with a boom mic. Like, this is not like, hey, I rigged up a wire or there's a transmitter somewhere. Right. Like, he's basically a one man film crew. Yeah, so it's kind of hard to be inconspicuous when you're lugging this
thing
around.
And it's like, the audio and video are separate. Like, it's not, doesn't do every. So, yeah, it's quite a setup. But yeah, it is 1983. And yes, Toyman, you can comment on anything you want in this movie as we go along. That's kind of the point of this show, I think.
That's why I'm here, yeah.
So Storm, after he makes his hasty exit, gets to a payphone and calls his boy Becker, Carl Becker, who he calls Carlito, and tells him, hey, this is what I got, bum, 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 got it on tape. But what he doesn't know and what Becker doesn't know are there guys listening in. There's some dirty cops. Go figure.
I know.
But again, he doesn't realize this and he's just going to go home. He's going to stop at the liquor store first, though. He wants to get a nice bottle of champagne because it's Oscar night in LA.
A little bit of bubbly. A little bit of bubbly.
And he wants to celebrate. He goes home and he's in the kitchen. He stashes his, I skipped over the best part. He goes to the liquor store, and of course, what happens when you go to like a convenience store or liquor store? It's like they're high. They might be right behind parking garages,
parking garage or a bar.
It's somewhere. Those three. You go into one of those, trouble's gonna happen. And indeed, it does. He gets the champagne. He has a little back and forth with the owner, who's not a big fan of the Oscars. And also not a fan of punks coming into his place to rob it. Who wants that?
No, led by another great character actor, Robert Lissardo.
Robert Lissardo's in there, and the owner was played by Stanley Brock, who I always remember from UHF and Night of the Comet.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's like 4-on-1, but it doesn't matter. They do kill the owner because he pulls a bat on him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was taking no shit from him. And of course, Mason Storm, I mean, with a name like Mason Storm, you kind of have to be a badass, I think.
Yeah.
And he essentially no-sells everything they do toward him. And even to a point, he gets one of their weapons and lays it on the ground, and then he just gets down on his knees and kind of begs them to attack him, which is...
Yeah,
awesome.
That was for Robert Lissardo. He had the knife. He's like, oh, you want to cut me? And he got on his knees and wound up doing Ken Shamrock ankle lock to
I love it.
Snap his foot in another direction.
Most dangerous man alive. So now after that brouhaha and the cops come and he's, all right, well, I got to go home. He's heading home, turns on the radio. First thing on there is the smooth sounds of Chuck Mangione. Mangione. Easy for me to say. Let me tell you a story about this, because this, again, another coincidence. I don't know what the grocery stores are like for you, Chris, or for you, Chad. But the grocery store I go to, every once in a while, the music they're playing is so freaking loud. Like, it's just like a rock concert. It was a Chuck Mangione concert in there. And it was the 10-minute version of Feels So Good. And it just was there the entire time I was in there. There were old people just like into it. It was like a whole vibe, as the kids would say. People were just mesmerized by this song, and I'm just like, wow, I had not heard that song in forever. And then days later I pop in Hard to Kill and that's old Seagal listening to it.
This was destiny.
My grocery stores, I have the problem where I'll hear a song and I'll be like, this was like my jam not that long ago, and now it's a grocery store
song.
That's
right. Though that definitely has happened. I remember really enjoying the Neutron Dance one time when I was at the grocery store waiting in line. That's probably before they had all the self checkouts and you just did it yourself.
Did you have the pineapple and the upside down pineapple in the front of your cart?
No.
You don't know about
that? What is that?
I don't know, just try it out. Just take it, you know, the little children's sitting area in the cart. Mm-hmm. Just take an upside down pineapple and kind of set it there and see if anything happens.
I'll give that a try.
Yeah.
So
it's like an experiment from Beekman's world over here.
What a great show, by the way. Classic.
So instead of listening to Chuck, he puts in the audio tape he recorded and he's like, I recognize this voice, but he just can't quite put his finger on who it is. Puts it in his jacket, gets home, stashes the camera in his little secret cubbyhole in the kitchen before he heads upstairs to be with his wife, Felicia, who's telling, you know, their son was a real pain in the ass going to bed.
Yep.
As kids often are. And so they look in on him and there's Sonny, his son. Very original name. You know, you have 9 months to figure out what you're going to name a kid, and you named him Sonny.
No, Sonny was his nickname. Don't forget. His actual name was Jeremy. We see I don't want to spoil it, but we find out later in the film that Sonny was just his nickname.
You're killing my bit here that I stole from Bobby Heenan.
You know, what's funny is, Brain, I had more than 9 months because my youngest child did not have a name for like 3 weeks.
Oh.
So a little bit of trivia.
I just wondered if it would be daughtery if it was a girl. That's all I was going to get to before Toyman cut me off.
Sorry.
It's all right. It wasn't that good. Mason and Sonny then decide, okay, you're not asleep. Did you say your prayers? No, I was waiting for you, Dad. Classic kid trick. So they do their prayers. All right, well, now I'm going to go bang your mom, so go to bed. He doesn't say that. But that's what happens.
That's what he's thinking. Yeah.
And they enjoy some champagne and he enjoys his wife's company. And we're getting some partial nudity and it's getting really romantic. And he's, you know, probably if he was just sitting there watching Johnny Carson, he may have heard these guys entering the home. But he was, you know, there was probably moaning and heavy breathing and blood wasn't all in his. One, it was going south, and
there was blood too.
And anyway, Mason, there is blood because these guys enter the house, come in, they shoot him like instantly. But
he takes one to the chest.
Basically, right? No cells that first one. The adrenaline.
It was like the shoulder.
Shoulder. Okay.
Adrenaline's flowing. His wife, she shot dead, and they shoot Mason again. This time in the chest. Sonny obviously wakes up from that to see what the hell's going on, and they try to shoot him. He jumps out the window, and it's kind of like you assume he gets away, but you don't know, right? At this point, you're like, well, I didn't see him die, but you're like, did they just not want to show a dead kid?
Right.
So you don't know what happens to him. I mean, this is an avenging force. They didn't have a problem showing dead kids.
No, they would have. Jump, thrown him out, and then shot him.
Throw him off the roof.
On the ground. Yeah.
God bless you, Canon. Canon Films, if I haven't thanked the world for your existence recently, I'm doing it right now on this program. God, I love that fucking company. All right.
Does Mason Storm, does he still have the vest on at this point?
It wasn't a bulletproof one, I'll tell you that.
He still had on the white shirt and the vest, yeah.
The white shirt and vest. I feel like we've got to bring that look back, because I kind of like that.
Do it.
I never got rid of it. I mean,
really?
You know, I work from home for the most part, so I'm not exactly prepping it up every day. But I have a vest ensemble.
The waistcoat ensemble. I like it.
I do, yeah.
I can't wait to see that.
And let's talk about something that we often talk about on this program, especially when Chad Cruz is here. Let's say, what would Jean-Claude Van Damme have been wearing if it was him in the role?
With boxers?
I think that you would have got a similar scene to like in Bloodsport where he would have been kind of pulling up his briefs as the masked men came in.
Oh, yeah.
So you would have got a quick ass shot.
But he's definitely not going to be wearing a shirt with a vest.
No, fuck no. He would have been.
It'd been harder to hide the squibs, though.
He would have had a good glaze on him, a sex glaze, you know, That's where you're also.
Yeah, we understand.
All the moisture.
Moisture, yeah. Dampness.
A lot of fluids.
Fluid, bodily fluids.
Yeah. Might have had a champagne bottle. I would have had the champagne bottle in his hand. And then when they shot him, it blows. Yeah. It breaks. It looks sick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but yeah, Seagal is different, right? We've talked about this. You know, Van Damme is a whole nother league, but Seagal is, he kind of feels more like a real person.
He does.
He's not all jacked with muscles everywhere and crazy accent. He does have kind of a strange way of speaking
and running,
but, and running and looking, and he's just a weird guy, yeah. I guess. But he seems more real.
Yeah, he's real weird. The masked men also plant cocaine all over the house, and they get any kind of tapes they could find. I bet you they had, like, if they went to Toyman's house, they'd break their back getting all his tapes. But now we...
I bet Seagal had some tapes of him and his wife.
Yeah, that'd be something, huh? Yeah, he had to test out all his new high tech at the time camera equipment.
His gear, yeah, man.
Home movies.
So Mason Storm is still alive when he gets to the hospital. We see Assemblyman Vernon Trent there being interviewed and just acting shocked and how horrible this situation is. And that's where we also now see our good friend from Internal Affairs, O'Malley. Probably one of the, like, usually Internal Affairs when they're not very well liked.
Right.
But in this case, he's like the greatest, most loved Internal Affairs cop of all time. And when he hears some of the other cops there, the homicide cops saying, oh, the Storm was unstoppable. No wonder he was coked up. He did not want to hear that shit about his friend Mason.
Right. Yeah, he's as good a friend.
He would lose his badge to put that guy in the ground or something.
Mm-hmm.
You got a buddy like that, Brain? You got somebody who has your back like that?
Isn't it you?
I want to be that guy for you. I want to be the guy. I'll put my badge in my piece.
Yeah. At this point, I'd be happy if you were the guy who just got his updates done on time and everything was good.
What do I got to do to be in your will? That's all I want to know.
Yeah, your updates.
I'm going to leave you on my debt. I've already decided that.
Shit.
I get the figures. You get the debt.
You'll get the debt. I'm like, well. I know he's very wise and conscientious, and he'll take care of this problem so it's not like falls on my family or anything.
I'm going to fake my own death. That's what I'm doing.
Well, speaking of...
And did you notice who played O'Malley?
Frederick Coffin.
Coffin.
He was the commanding officer from the Richard Grieco classic, If Looks Could Kill.
Oh, yeah, which was recently covered on bulletproofaction.com mm-hmm. by our colleague Matt Spector. It's everything's connecting.
This is weird.
It is freaking like quantum leap with the string theory or some shit. All right. So we've got you think O'Malley didn't want to hear the news of these cops saying, "Oh yeah, your boy was coked up." This next bit of news is real shitty because a doctor comes out and says, "Hey, he dead." So obviously O'Malley's stunned. The other cops are like, well, I guess he's been taken care of this time, and they go away. But then, wait a minute, the doctor must have been too hasty. Because he's like, wait a minute, no, the guy's still alive. So O'Malley gets in there, and he like takes control. He's like, all right, all you, I got to talk to all of you before you leave this room. But Stone is safer as a dead man, so we're just going to pretend he's dead until I say otherwise.
Is this like did you guys watch Arrested Development? Did you guys ever watch that series?
I didn't finish it.
I did, yes.
With the doctor, he's always like, your father, he looks like he's dead. And they're like, oh my God. He goes, he's alive. He just looks like he's dead.
Yes, you know? I remember that.
Was it a situation like that, I wonder?
Could have been. And speaking of dead, Senator Caldwell is dead. And get this, in a plane crash. Just like our boy Vernon Trent requested. What are the odds?
Still the safest way to travel, folks.
It is. I heard that from Superman many, many years ago. 7 years later, Mason Stone has got a crazy-ass beard.
Wait, Stone? Who the fuck is Mason Stone?
Storm.
Like a Fu Manchu.
Storm, I'm sorry.
Fu Manchu goatee.
Yeah.
Fu Manchu, yeah, he does have a wicked... He looks like he did that John Wayne Genghis Khan movie. You ever see that one?
Yeah, disregard my notes. Somehow Storm became Stone partway through.
You were thinking of masonry, like stonework?
I was probably thinking of Stone Cold Steve Austin, possibly.
What? It is WrestleMania week.
I watch this on WrestleMania week, so obviously that was going to happen. So Mason is now just John Doe, and he's in a coma. And that's where we're going to meet Andy Stewart, played by the one and only Kelly LeBrock. She is one of the nurses caring for him. And Chad, I'm glad you're here. Because I will say, you know, she's very confident that one day, even though it's been 7 years, one day this man is going to wake up, and then she offers him a little pussy.
Oof. How kind of her. Kelly LeBrock, you know, just licking my lips over here thinking about it. I go to a lot of hospitals, Brain.
Yeah. You ever see a Kelly LeBrock 1990 version?
Oof. I've seen a lot of attractive, there's a lot of wonderfully talented women and men, of course. And very attractive ones, but I don't see many of them offering up little pussies to a comatose patients.
How often are you hanging out with the comatose patients, though?
I don't do that often. Right. I've sometimes bring them in.
Right.
I don't spend a lot of time in the wing of the hospital where they have all the coma patients. Wing.
Yeah, it's very
coma wing.
Well, I guess it doesn't have to be quiet. That's where you could probably be very loud. What the fuck do they care?
Well, that, you know, Kill Bill. That's where Buck is.
Okay.
My name is Buck, and I like to fuck.
All right. Well, after the pussy offer, she leaves the room, and he starts finger blasting. Oh. I mean, his fingers start moving.
Oh, God.
And then the brain activity starts up, because we're getting flashbacks to his family. It's the good times, and then, of course, the horrific night that took it all away. Then she comes, oh, you're awake. This is amazing. Where's that card that was given to me 7 years ago? It probably was in his file. I'm going to call O'Malley. He said, when he wakes up, you call me, is what I'm assuming happened. But in 7 years, O'Malley no longer works for internal affairs. He's no longer a cop. She talks to Sergeant Goodhart, played by Dean Norris, and he's like, oh, yeah, we'll take care of this. So now she goes back to Stone. He's like, what year is it? I believe he sees George Bush on the TV as the president, which was not the case when he went under. And somehow he knows there's trouble coming and that she needs to get him the hell out of there. And Chris,
I like how that news report acted as if George Bush was like the brand new president when we're in 1990 now. So he's been president for about 2 years
at this midterm. Point. Yeah. I don't know. I guess because they knew this was Storm's first chance to see. Who knows? But that's a good point.
Watching reruns.
Yeah. But Storm knew what the hell he was talking about, because a suspicious doctor shows up at the hospital. One of Trent's goons, Jack Axel. What a Ooh. Name that is, huh?
That's a good one. That's like a wrestling Great name.
Like Curtis Axel?
Isn't he still in the Royal Rumble?
He is. He never got eliminated. One day he's going to cash in on that.
I can't wait.
It'd be a great day. Security guard's like, I've never seen this doctor before. That's a good security guard, too. He's very good.
But this is, you know, this is 1990, right? Things are, you know, now, right? You just, anybody can walk in. Who the fuck are you? And, oh, I'm a new doctor. Okay, come on in.
Stupid. fools. People are fools so today. Well, if he would have taken that tact, he may still be alive, though.
It's true. He should, yeah, just eyes down, mop the floor.
Security guard? Yeah, what are you having? They're short-staffed over there, I guess, if he's mopping the floor. He's
a custodian. Well, you know, you get bored just kind of standing at the door sometimes. You grab a mop.
Okay. Well, he ends up dead. The physical therapist who comes to get Mason to give him a massage, he also ends up dead. And then Mason, though, even though he's strapped to this gurney.
Why was that guy so excited to massage him? Didn't he seem a little...
He's into his work. People used to be enthusiastic about going to work in 1990.
I don't know, man. That seemed a bit much.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. And we can't ask him because he's dead. Ugh. So there's that. There's that problem.
Anyway, Mason Stone.
No, Mason Storm.
Storm.
Oh, don't read my notes. He's strapped to this gurney. He's still more effective than most people.
Yeah, he's got the...
He's got a mop.
The mop stick, right? Yeah. Didn't he? He took it from the security guard.
Exactly. I'm sorry. You're right. He did. He took it from the security guard. He's using this mop. He gets into the goddamn elevator with it. I mean, he's... Like, why didn't Jack Axel just shoot him from where he was? Tell me why, Chris. Please tell me why.
I thought you were singing the Backstreet Boys karaoke for a second
there. I was about to sing Lit is what I was going for.
Because, well, do you make me miserable? I would say that coming out of a coma and then immediately dying would have made this a very short movie.
That's true. He's right.
You're right.
He's right. It helps the story.
That's the right answer.
And they definitely couldn't call it Hard to Kill at that point.
Right.
No, he would have been super easy to kill.
It's like, well, he should have at least taken a shot and like he just missed him. I don't know.
Do you know what it was, Brain? I know the answer.
Please enlighten me.
The Fu Manchu threw him off because he was like, that's not Mason Storm. Right. He didn't have a Fu Manchu.
Yeah, that's like the corpse of Genghis Khan reanimated or something.
That might be Mason Stone. I don't know.
That was Steven Seagal doing his Al Leong cosplay.
I like it. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, this whole time for 7 years, they've been shaving him and growing out that Fu Manchu for this purpose.
It all's
there for a reason.
Thank you, Andy. Speaking of Andy, she sees these two dead bodies of her coworkers on the floor and then like, wait, where's my patient? And she goes looking for him. She finds him on another floor when she tries to get into the elevator. Is she going to listen to him now? I think so, because she takes him on a wild ride. She's pushing that gurney, bumping into things left and right, then gets him into her convertible, and they are off. And now we cut to our senator now. He took old Caldwell's spot, Senator Vernon Trent, giving a speech about gang violence and getting guns off the street. And then 2 seconds later, plotting with his boys, like, okay, Storm is out. I'm back to Storm on the notes. Storm is out. Leak it to the press that he was crooked, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Typical power abusing son of a bitch.
So far we've got crooked cops. We've got crooked politicians.
Just politicians.
Well, yeah. Is there a straight politician? I don't think they exist.
They not for long.
Harrison Ford in Air Force One. He was good.
Yeah, you're right. Well, Storm wakes up in an Asian themed bedroom.
Hell yeah!
Flips on the TV, watches some Geraldo. It was after Geraldo had his nose broken. The brouhaha on his set. We get a Vernon Trent campaign commercial coming on. And then we find out this is a house that belonged to a doctor friend of Andy who is overseas and she's just been house sitting. So this address is not attached to her in any way. So
nothing could possibly happen to this house. No.
Right.
We're safe here. No one knows. No one even knows I'm here. The number isn't in nothing. There's no record of me and this house being together.
And it's a large property with plenty of rooms. It has an Asian theme room that, I mean, that's a lot of, you got to have a lot of space to have an entire room with a theme of Asia. So
is that something you'd like to have one day?
I'd love to have a room full of Asian women.
All right.
You know what I mean?
I got you. Jed Cruz is back, folks. All right. We find out that Mason spent some of his, he was raised over in the East. Was it Japan? Was it like his real life? Did they say, or was it China? I put the East.
In the Far East. Yeah. Far East. It's like pro wrestling in like the 70s. Right. Yeah. He's from the East.
The Orient.
I don't, you know, his movies, they always kind of blend, his real life origin with, I don't know. Like,
he had a lot of creative control. You can tell.
Yeah. They're like, well, so now what do you want to do? He's like, I'm just going to wear this vest. And like, aren't you supposed to be like undercover and hiding out? And he's like, I'm also 6'3" and I'm hiding in this alley with 60 pounds worth of equipment. Like, okay, whatever. Nobody cares.
Well, when he was over in the Far East, he learned to heal before he learned to fight. So that's, we'll see that in a bit.
No doubt.
I mean, he's freshly shaven now. They kind of joke about, oh, were you the one who gave me this stupid Fu Manchu? Yeah. Ha ha ha. Andy goes out apparently to the library, and she goes to the microfiche, and she prints out some shit about his family being killed in the newspaper, all the newspaper articles. So he reads those. And then it's time. It's one of our favorite times, Chad Cruz, because it's montage time.
Hell yeah. And this is a good one because not only is it, you know, just a guy who's training, it's not just a guy preparing for the big fight. This is a guy that's got to go from like the bottom. He's got to go all the way from the bottom and he's got to rebuild his body into a killing machine. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's hard to kill,
right?
But right now it's going to be hard for him to kill anyone because he's so fucking weak.
Yeah. And you get the training, you get some flashbacks to his family. We get to see the acupuncture. So that's where the healing skills come in. And
acupuncture that he lights the wicks on fire. So we actually get to see Steven Seagal lighting himself on fire to an extent, acting as like a human candle base.
Right. Not to the Richard Pryor levels, but he did a good job there. One thing that they do realize is we need to find what the hell happened to our boy O'Malley. Yeah. Where is he? So that's another task for Andy, who's just apparently left her job, which is probably smart because obviously the bad guys are going to be looking for her.
Right. I think she's also, you know, you can kind of sense that she's, you know, all this time, I don't know what syndrome this is, but she's been kind of caring for him for years and she's developed these feelings for him. And now she's in a place where she can help him. And I think she's really passionate about
She's about to help him.
I'm hoping that there's a release soon.
Yeah. So she goes, she finds us.
You did offer him a little pussy.
Oh my. So she goes, she finds like, oh, I think this is O'Malley's mom, but she's, oh no, nobody named O'Malley here. And but then she sees like the cop gimmick in the house where she leaves the number. She's like, this crafty old broad. And then she goes back to the ranch, and she gets all gussied up, and she comes in the room, and it is time to give our boy Storm a little cardio workout, wouldn't you say?
No doubt. Yeah, he's going to have to get that heart pumping, I'd say, because it's been several years, and he's going to have to work out some kinks, I'd say. You know, take it nice and slow, Mason, because you don't want to throw yourself back into a comatose.
Maybe one of her kinks is sleeping with former comatose patients.
That could be. Maybe he's still got some numbness down there and it makes him last
longer. Didn't she take a peek at it when he was in the
hospital. Oh, guaranteed. She was probably like trimming it into a Fu Manchu.
Little manscaping. This is where if we had that Manscaped sponsorship, boom, we'd hit it right here.
Let's just start doing it for the plug. Let's speak it into existence here. Just start giving us a Manscaping
commercial. Toyman for 10% off. You can make your private areas as slick as his head.
Oh, wait a minute. What head are we talking about? Hold on. How did I become the scapegoat for all of this here?
I'm talking about your bald head, you bald bastard. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
if you got hair on that other head, you got some medical, you might want to go to the hospital. All right.
It is going bananas week.
That was last week.
Oh, that was last week. What day is it?
We're recording this during Going Bananas Week, and we are living up to that.
And this whole podcast is going bananas now.
Cuckoo bananas. Where am I? Oh.
He just fucked the shit out of her.
He sure did. And again.
After she brought him a flower. First a pussy, and then she's like, would you like a flower?
Yeah, he deflowered her.
He sure did.
And again.
And then there was blood.
Unlike our friend Jean-Claude. We don't see much. It just boom. He's done. He's not a show off like a JCVD,
right? And they were married.
They were they could have just fucked right on camera and it would have been fine.
They could have given us everything. But you know what? I appreciate the fact that they kept it
classy.
Kept it mostly classy.
Right. Just leave it to your imagination. And when you're someone like Chad Cruz, you have quite the imagination for things like this.
It's dirty. It's filthy.
So after that, maybe she wants to go brag to her nurse friend because maybe they were both checking out his penis under that sheet. And he's like, I'm going to go tell my friend Martha that I banged John Doe.
Bed four.
Yeah, I bed him. All right. So she goes to find Martha, goes to her apartment, but the bad guys are watching. She knocks on the door. The neighbor comes out like, what are you knocking on this? Didn't you hear? It's all over the news. She's dead. And hey, aren't you the lady on the news? Oh, so she gets the hell out of there. But now, since Andy went to see O'Malley's mom and left that phone number, our boy O'Malley, he may have retired, but he still has his cop instincts and he does all his research and he finds his old friend Storm. Tells him what happened. He's retired, took a 3/4 pension because the investigation was going nowhere. People weren't helping him out. And obviously we know why, Chad, because they're dirty cops and they're in with the dirty politician and it's all, and then when his mother started getting threatened, he's like, no, but even, most importantly, we found out he took Sonny in and he's been raising him this whole time. That's a hell of a friend.
What a wonderful kind of twist at this point, right? Because we don't know what happened to Sonny. We can guess, but it's been 7 years, and beyond the fact that Mason has been a little preoccupied, he still misses his child. Oh, yeah. Obviously,
that's his boy. That's 9 months. Called him Sonny or Jeremy, which is a dumb name anyway. All right,
I kind of prefer Sonny.
Yeah, I would.
Sonny Storm, though, is...
Sounds like a WCW...
Yeah.
Sounds like he could finish the story.
I think he could... It's like a... comic books always have, like, the alliteration.
Yes.
Peter Parker. Yep.
Peter Bruce Parker. Banner. Lois Lane.
Bruce
Banner. Lex Luthor.
Clark Clint.
Thank you. That was... awful. All right. All right. Now we got a plan. All right. Why don't you go get Sonny O'Malley? Because if they figure this all out, he's going to be in trouble. He's got the audio tape already. He got that from him at the hospital. Being O'Malley, pronouns. But now Mason and Andy have to go get that video evidence that he stashed in his little cubbyhole or wherever the hell he had going on in the kitchen. So it's time to go in disguise. And Chris, would you say that Mason looked like Jerry Pelt?
No, I would say that he was dressed more like a maitre d' at a high-end Italian restaurant than a realtor. So I don't know if he would be working for the Pelt Realty Company. I don't know if, you know, he was the RE/MAX employee of the month. He looked a little too slick to be a real estate agent. Although this day and age, with the way prices are, he'd probably be a welcome addition to the real estate ranks.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. He hid that tape in the old, the glory hole, I believe you called it.
I did not call it that, but you did.
Well, he just goes and smashes up the lady's poor house. Oh, I think your contractor's doing a lousy job.
Yeah.
Just puts the guy on the spot. Probably gets him fired.
Yeah. You know what I think would have been really cool is when we first meet Sonny, if he had a Fu Manchu.
He wasn't that old yet.
I know, but you're in hiding. Chu?
No.
I just brought this podcast to a dead stop.
Done. We're just done. And
cut that 3 or 4 seconds.
This podcast just went into the coma that Mason Storm came out of. We just traded places.
Trading Places is a great film.
That is a
great film.
Just not that this one isn't. I'm having a great time with it, and having an even greater list. Time. That's not an action movie, you jackass. It's called Bulletproof Action. Bulletproof Podcast. Okay. I mean, we could potentially do it if we just wanted to do it for like a Christmas episode because we're like, it's Christmas. If you don't like it, kiss our ass. You know, being in the holiday spirit and all.
Holiday spirit and all. I mean, you're going to, never mind. Go ahead. Keep going.
This podcast might be 4 or 5 hours long. I've lost my, oh yeah. So we're going to go do that. So they get the thing. They get the contractor fired. The bad guys catch up with O'Malley, and Sonny at the train station. O'Malley, somebody had to be the sacrifice, and unfortunately it's him. He ends up dead, but not before he gave that tape to Sonny and is like, get the hell out.
Right.
Now the baddies.
That part always stuck with me. Ever since I was a little kid when I first saw this movie, the part where like he is like, you know, letting Sonny escape and he's like, run, Sonny. And then he's like about to die. He's like, I love you, Sonny. And he cracks the guy with the crowbar or the tire iron.
Hell yeah.
For whatever reason, ever since I was a kid, I have always remembered that part vividly.
I think that O'Malley is such an awesome character in this movie. You know what I mean? Like there's, you know, obviously Andy is super helpful to Mason, but O'Malley is just like the unsung hero of this film. Just believes so much in his friend and refuses to kind of give up.
And again, and being an internal affairs guy, you would think he'd be thinking the worst of everybody at all times.
Like he would be the crooked one.
Yeah, that too.
I don't know. But yeah, it's great. He's a great character. And I can't, when I see this actor, Mr. Whatever's Coffin, whatever
Frederick Coffin.
First name,
Frederick Coffin.
Frederick Coffin. I can only see him as O'Malley. I don't see him as anything else. This is
this was good for him.
And how ironic that we've got a movie called Hard to Kill starring a guy with the last name Coffin.
It's true.
So Sonny is getting chased by the bad guys, and now Mason shows up and he's running after all of them, which gives us eventually the Steven Seagal versus Branscombe Richmond battle that everybody was waiting for. And it ends pretty definitively, Chad, because old Mason breaks his neck.
Yeah. Fucking kills a guy right there in front of everybody. They all kind of clap for him. the crowd goes wild.
In about 4 years.
I think my notes, don't they go to a hotel at this point? Don't they meet up? I don't have it here, but I know they had the... I was playing. It was wonderful. I was having a good time. Probably why I had tacos for dinner. I don't know. It was in my head. But yeah, when it all comes down to it, they take out all these bad guys. But there's one more bad guy he's got left. And we know who it is. It's that son of a bitch, Vernon Trent. Cut to that. He's sitting in his hot tub. He's got a beautiful woman with him. And he's like, you know, this Mason guy, he's crazy. And if he'll show up here, I better cancel my ballet plans.
Ballet.
A man of class and culture, that Vernon Trent.
Poser. So Mason does show up. Sees some of the boys like Jack Axel playing some billiards. And he wants to join them. But we know how that's going to end for those guys. Based on our convenience store earlier, they just all die. He kills them all.
Yeah. He has such a swagger.
He does.
This Mason Storm, this Steven Seagal, this birthday boy that we're celebrating today. He swaggers in. He's not like, you know, tactically moving and shooting. He just kind of walks in and everyone's like, look at this fucking guy. You know what I mean? So, and I think that really plays into his strategy of, you know, he kind of catches him off guard with, his ability to not really seem that deadly. And then he fucking murders them.
It's murders great. Them with almost with ease, really with ease.
Yeah. And he drops so many good one-liners in this film. Oof. Oh, this is for my wife. Fuck you and die.
Yeah, there was that part with the blood bank too. Take it to the bank.
You could take that to the bank.
Blood bank. But blood see, bank. That one doesn't make any sense because if you're taking someone to the blood bank, it's almost like you're helping them survive, not kill them. No. It's like, oh, you need a transfusion. Let me get you there. This is not, like, I want to watch you wither away. It's like die.
The Jeremy thing all over again with you. Well, you quit know, raining on Senator, parades over there.
I think Senator Trent, didn't he, that was his line, right? You can take that to the bank. Right.
It was. That was his gimmick.
You to the bank, to the blood bank.
Yeah. That was his catchphrase.
Yeah.
He got caught all right. He got caught in the closet with a gun. And he gets toyed with a bit. You know, Mason's going to, he's relishing this toy moment. Man. Yeah, toy man. He's going to relish this moment. Because this son of a bitch, you're going to get yours. But he takes so long to just kill this motherfucker that the SWAT team shows up. And at first we're like, are they here for Mason or are they here for Trent? Which is it?
Yeah.
And they saw the evidence because that's why they had to go and they had get the tapes to the news guy. And so these SWAT team were watching or that got forwarded to the authorities, obviously. Trent is arrested and we have a happy ending. All things considering.
Right. And there's some great, you know, we kind of skimmed over that finale, right? He jams the fucking shotgun in his mouth. And his mouth's just bleeding everywhere. Yeah. And he shoots, he like aims at his dick and he shoots and he's like, I missed. I never miss. They must have been smaller than I thought.
Look at you, Chad Cruz. You got like great. Total recall.
We also glossed over when Jack Axel took a broken billiard stick to the neck.
To the throat.
And then had his head kicked backwards. So he gets stabbed in the neck and then basically had his neck broken by a kick.
God, I love it.
Any other things that we haven't covered? When they escape in the car and then they have to switch cars? You know, there was a...
I think...
Oh, you know, with the Latino gangbangers.
Yeah, they switch out.
He's like, oh, and then you hear the gangbanger like, oh, this car looks like it's been in a war, man. But they take it anyway.
Hey, that's right.
And as they were driving away from the now blown to bits, shot up doctor's house or whatever, you just hear Kelly LeBrock say, oh, I forgot to lock the door.
Well,
so even she was getting some one-liners in there.
I fell off the couch with laughter on that one.
And correct me if I'm wrong.
I will.
This is, you know, by the end of this movie, it's ultimate revenge. You know, Mason's going after these guys to fucking take him out. Is he or is he not wearing a leather jacket?
I don't know if it was a leather one, but it was just a black jacket.
Okay.
I don't know if it was leather.
I don't remember either.
It might have just been like a members only type of jacket.
I can't imagine Steven Seagal wearing a members only jacket. I can imagine him wearing a giant leather trench coat with Indian Native American shit all over it.
I've seen it.
I wonder if he's got any... Remember starter jackets? I wonder if we ever got one of those. That was 90s.
It sure was.
Maybe he's got an eight ball jacket.
Oh, I need one of those, dude.
Do you do?
The American flag, like in To Be the Best, the old USA American flag leather jackets.
Dude, I'd wear that shit every day.
I think it was a leather jacket, Chad.
Thank you. I just wanted to confirm that.
I think he did. It's definitely, he's got the leather jacket on the poster. All right. Well, final thoughts, Chris, on Hard to Kill here on Steven Seagal's birthday.
Like I said earlier, this is definitely one of his more highly regarded films. I think that next to Marked for Death, this might be my favorite Seagal film. You know, I do lean more towards the classics than those latter day ones. So good choice to celebrate the man on his birthday. I've always liked this one, had fun watching it again. And yeah, I mean, not much more to say about it. It's Steven Seagal. You know, he definitely took a slide as the years went on. So this is one where he's still held in a bit of a high regard.
Good choice. And guess who made it? It was Chris. So he's just patting himself on the back, Barry Horowitz style. Chad, we got to hear your final thoughts, because this may be the last time we hear from you for 6 months. So what do you got to say?
The literal final word.
That's true. It's very possible. Hold on 1 second. I'd like to just say that, you know, for action movie fans, as we are, and as those that are listening still at this point, this movie has it all. Even if you don't like Steven Seagal, it's got great action. He breaks all kinds of arms and necks and legs and shit, and breaks a guy's ankle. He has great one-liners. He's killing people left and right. He lays some pipe. There's some Asian stuff in it. He's got a Fu Manchu at one point, but not in like a racist stereotypical way. He's just kind of like, God damn it, who shaved this? Who put this on my face? The movie's got it all. And I think, you know, I agree, Chris, like this is among his best. This is probably up there for me, like Marked for Death, Under Siege, those are probably above the law. Those are all great. But I cannot get enough of Hard to Kill. I just think it's peak Seagal, and he's like, I would love to say he's unstoppable, but he's hard to kill.
And there's really not much else you could say.
It's in the title.
Excellent. Ring the bell. You said the title. All right. Well, there you have it. Happy birthday, Steven Seagal, from everyone here at Bulletproof Action and the Bulletproof Podcast. We're going to wrap things up, of course, as I always do. If you want to follow us on social media, we are on X at Bulletproof Pod, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Bulletproof Action. You mentioned it earlier, Chris. We lost a great action icon. Louis Gossett Jr. passed away at 87 years old. Obviously, one of my favorites. We've talked about him on this program when we covered Iron Eagle, when we covered Toy Soldiers. Chappie Sinclair, I wish I had a mentor like Chappie Sinclair in my life. What could I have become if I had a Chappie Sinclair in my life, I think? Just a great character, a great actor, won the Oscar in 1983. So many other movies, too. Enemy Mine, The Principal. Punisher with... Yeah, favorite Punisher. Part of the reason is it's because freaking Louis Gossett Jr. was in that one. Definitely going to be missed. You know, this has been a real shit year. I mean, we had Carl Weathers first, and now Louis Gossett Jr. Mm-hmm. This has been heartbreaking for me with so many of these heroes of mine, you know, have fallen. So, some of your favorite memories, Chris, of old Louis Gossett Jr.
I mean, you pretty much already mentioned them. I mean, Iron Eagle, you and I have talked about Iron Eagle quite a bit during the course of our friendship and during the course of our columns and podcasts. So, you know, Chappie, arguably my most favorite and most memorable role of his, although, you know, he did plenty of non-action stuff. We mentioned An Officer and a Gentleman, which he might have been most famous for. But just, you know, a great, great actor no matter what he was in. I can't think of any role that I disliked Lou Gossett Jr. in. Just a true icon who is definitely going to be missed.
Chad, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, I mean, I reiterate what you guys said and agree with everything you just said. And you know, everybody kind of has their own, you know, actors who've been around a long time. We all kind of have that role that we identify them with the most. And it, with you, Chappie Sinclair, from Dean Parker is probably the one for me from Toy Soldiers. Digstown is like one of my favorite boxing movies of all time. Great love movie, Digstown. Yeah. But yeah, just he's one of those actors who brought just an incredible amount of just like legitimacy to anything he did. And I would like to propose this to you guys. And this is kind of a strange thing to do maybe, but we should probably do it going forward. And, you know, I feel like we're losing all these great actors that we grew up with, that we loved and that we still love. And in the end, we finally say, God, they were so good. I wish we kind of talked about them more. Like, I think, you know, maybe each episode we have an actor that we kind of bring a focus on to, right? With the new Ghostbusters movie, they're talking about Ernie Hudson a lot. And I'm like, God damn, he's been in so many great films. Like, why can't we, you know, recognize these guys before they're dead?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that you know, and that's obviously part of what we do here on the show and on the site is, you know, we go back to some of the, you know, obviously the older movies are our bread and butter. And the reason why we kind of wanted to do it to begin with, we don't necessarily want to cover all the brand new releases, although we do, but the fun is going back and talking about classics like we did today and like we will continue to do. But yeah, and you know, the other thing is when you see like people who worked with him also doing their, Jason Gedrick had a great tribute to him. And that, I think that made me feel worse. It's like, when the news hit, I wanted to punch out, be done for the day. Like, I'd be like, I don't want to do work. I couldn't focus. It was horrible, but, definitely will be missed. And yeah. We might have to cover Digstown or something here soon. That's one I don't think I've ever seen in its entirety, and now I feel horrible about it. So
it's good. It's very good.
Maybe that will be a future episode. I definitely know what our next episode will be, however, because we're going to go back to 1997. We're going to talk about Drive, Mark Dacascos, Kadeem Hardison. Oh, just one of the most underrated action movies of the 90s. Another one that I don't think Ryan Campbell has ever seen. So he's going to get an education with that. And obviously if you gentlemen are available and would like to join, we can all talk about it because it is a damn good movie.
I am down to talk about it. I still have my VHS copy of it, which is a screener copy of the film.
I have my 4K copy that has never been opened. And I'm like, you know what? It's about to be.
That's damn right.
Gotta refresh yourself.
So that will be our next episode. Thank you, everyone, for checking us out and listening. And as always, stay tuned for more of the Bulletproof Podcast.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.